Welcome to the Berry & Lamberts Solicitors Podcast Series, Commercial Law and Dispute Resolution. In this series, we explain in everyday language how to go about planning for certain commercial scenarios, as well as explaining in more detail common disputes that may need legal resolution. Berry & Lamberts Solicitors, we're right by you through the good times, challenging times, and sad times.
I'm Paul Harvey, and today I'm with Simeon Blewett, who is a solicitor with Berry & Lambert Solicitors, and we're going to be talking about possession proceedings as part of the dispute resolution that comes up when we're talking about commercial and dispute resolution issues. So, Simeon, welcome to this podcast. Could you describe your role with Berry & Lambert?
I am a solicitor in the commercial and dispute resolution team, and we deal, as the name suggests, with any type of disputes that are in need of resolution, be that a property matter, boundary disputes, right-of-way disputes, could be contractual disputes, debt claims, and also landlord-tenant claims, such as we're discussing today, employment matters, and all host of contentious legal issues.
So as you say, yes, we're going to be talking about a landlord and tenant issue, and we're going to be focusing on possession proceedings. So my first question, Simeon, is what are the first things a landlord needs to think about if they want to recover possession of their property?
Well, the first thing you'll want to check is what type of tenancy it is. So these days, the vast majority of tenancies are assured shorthold tenancies. There are other types, but for this podcast, we'll just focus on the most common type, assured shorthold tenancies, or ASTs, as they are often known. So when it comes to ASTs, there are two different routes to recovering possession, each with its own pros and cons. And so a landlord needs to consider what their objective is and what the circumstances are of the particular tenancy. So firstly, you have the standard possession procedure that comes off the back of serving what's known as a Section 8 notice on the tenant. And secondly, you have the accelerated possession procedure, which comes off the back of serving a Section 21 notice. So the first step, serving one of these types of notice on the tenant, ideally, that would also be the last step, and often is the last step, if the tenant does indeed vacate in accordance with that notice. However, sometimes the tenant will stay in situ, be that because they can't find alternative accommodation or if they're simply refusing to leave. So at that point, a landlord can't get possession of their property without first obtaining a court order. And so in that scenario, it would be necessary to apply to court to get one.
You've touched on Section 8 and Section 21 notices. What is the difference between them?
If we start off with a Section 21 notice, that's probably the most common type of notice that I'm instructed to serve by landlord clients. So with this type of notice, the landlord doesn't actually require any reason to evict the tenant, and so it's often referred to as no-fault eviction. A Section 21 notice has to give the tenant at least 2 months to vacate the property. But other than that, there's no need, as I say, to provide any specific reason. The landlord should note that the 2 months can't expire before the fixed term of the tenancy has expired. So, for example, if you have a tenancy with a fixed term of 1 year, which then continues on a rolling periodic basis, a landlord couldn't serve a Section 21 notice, for example, 6 months into the tenancy, as the 2 months would then expire before the fixed term has expired. It's also not possible to serve a Section 21 notice within the first 4 months of a tenancy. So Section 21 notice, as I say, is the most common form, and it tends to be favoured by landlords because A, they don't need to provide a reason for evicting, and B, if the tenant does stay in the property once the notice expires, it's then a much easier process to get a court order. So in this scenario, a landlord will be able to use the accelerated possession procedure, which, as the name suggests, is a much faster process than the standard possession procedure. And there's effectively no defence for the tenant if the landlord issues an accelerated possession claim. It's mostly just a paper-based exercise without a hearing actually being required. So the landlord just needs to make sure that all their paperwork is in order. Otherwise, it is possible for a tenant to challenge the claim and try and argue that a Section 21 notice is invalid. So basically, if you're going to serve a Section 21 notice, a landlord needs to ensure a couple of things. Firstly, they need to provide a full 2 months to vacate. Secondly, needs to check that all the details on that notice, names and addresses, are all correct. Thirdly, that notice should be served on the tenant in a way which is specified in the tenancy agreement. So it will state within that document how such a notice should be served. It tends to be by first class post or perhaps recorded delivery or by hand. So always check that point. And then finally, and this is probably the hurdle where most landlords fall down, if they do fall down, is that the correct documents need to all have been provided at the tenant before a Section 21 notice is served. So at the outset of the tenancy, ideally, a copy of the Energy Performance Certificate, the EPC, and also a copy of the government's How to Rent Guide, copies of those can be obtained online. Both of those documents need to be given to the tenant before a Section 21 notice can be served, and ideally at the beginning of the tenancy. On top of that, if there are any gas appliances at the property, then the landlord also needs to make sure that for each year of the tenancy, a gas safety inspection is carried out and a copy of the gas safety certificate is given to the tenant each year and at the beginning of the tenancy. Those all need to be provided before a Section 21 notice is served as well. And finally, if there is a deposit, then a copy of the tenancy deposit certificate needs to be provided and all the prescribed information needs to be given to the tenant at the outset. As long as the landlord's done all that correctly, then getting a possession order, as I say, is more or less a paper-based exercise. It's trickier if a landlord slips up on one of those, because then essentially the argument is going to be that the Section 21 notice is invalid. So if that's the case, then the landlord needs to consider whether it's possible for them to go down the Section 8 route. So a Section 8 notice is different from a Section 21 notice, mostly in the sense that in this situation, the landlord does need to provide a reason for evicting the tenant. And there's a list of grounds under the relevant legislation. The most commonly used will be rent arrears, but there are a number of other grounds, including antisocial behaviour, breaches of the tenancy agreement, the property being redeveloped, or the landlord moving back into the property. And depending on what ground you go for, the notice period will be different. So, for example, for rent arrears, it's just 2 weeks, but for others, it may be 2 months. And again, if the tenant doesn't vacate, then the landlord needs to go to court for a possession order. But the difference here is that it's the standard possession proceedings, not the accelerated possession proceedings. So it's a longer process, and here a hearing will be required, and the judge will consider any defence that the tenant files, and they basically have a chance to file that defence, in which case it's likely that the matter will go to a full trial. And the judge will consider the particular ground that's been pleaded. So some are discretionary grounds, such as breach of tenancy, and the judge will decide whether they think it's reasonable in the circumstances to grant a possession order. Other grounds are mandatory. So, for example, if the landlord can show that there are at least 2 months' worth of rent outstanding at the date of the hearing, then the judge is more or less obliged to grant a possession order. So there's more to it if you're going down the Section 8 route. It's generally longer and a bit more complex.
Well, I hope there are lots of landlords and tenants listening to this so far. There's loads of information here to benefit both parties. I'm going to ask another question about what happens if a tenant stays in the property even after a court order has been granted against them.
Right, that does sometimes happen. And if a tenant does stay, then what the landlord needs to do is apply to court for a warrant of possession. And what that does is it fixes a date for the court to send a bailiff in. That usually adds a bit more in terms of costs and time, and usually it'll take maybe 4 to 8 weeks for the bailiff to come in, along with some added costs. But that's the step that a landlord would be looking at taking in that situation.
Is a court supportive of tenants if they decide to stay on? I mean, I'm fascinated to know.
There are points that a tenant can argue. Generally, if it's an accelerated possession claim and a possession order has been granted, then any application to get a bailiff in is pretty much always going to succeed. Something that a tenant can do if they are in a particularly difficult situation and suffering from extreme hardship, for example, say you've got a tenant who has disabled children or a tenant who's suffering from a medical condition and they've got the medical evidence to prove that, they can ask the court to grant an extension of time, by which point they need to move out. And I think the judge is entitled to grant up to an additional 42 days. So it's sort of kicking the can down the road, but it gives the tenant a bit more time to look for somewhere else.
And I think you might have touched on this, but what are the other timescales for these kinds of applications?
Okay, well, the main difference, of course, depends on whether the landlord's going down the standard possession route or the accelerated possession route. If you're looking at accelerated possession proceedings, generally, I'd say 6 to 8 weeks. Obviously, a few more weeks on top of that if a bailiff is required. And then you've got to factor in the 2 month notice period at the outset with the service of the Section 21 notice.
Okay.
With the standard procedure, you're probably looking at several months. Obviously, you'll need a hearing to be listed. And if the tenant does file a defence and further hearings are listed, it's only going to prolong the process. And then on top of that, again, you've got potentially a few weeks if a bailiff is required, and however long the notice period is for the Section 8 notice, depending on the particular ground being pleaded.
Okay, and here we go. We're going to touch on costs here, Simeon. The old question. Give us more information, please, about how much do these applications cost?
Well, if a landlord was to instruct Berry & Lamberts, then we charge, in terms of dealing with the Section 8 or Section 21 notice, we charge a fixed fee of £250 plus VAT. Hopefully that will be all the landlord will need to spend, but of course, if court proceedings are required, then we charge a fixed fee of £1,000 plus VAT for the accelerated possession procedure, or £1,500 plus VAT for the standard procedure, which includes the initial hearing. On top of that, there's also a court fee, which is currently £355. If we do need to go down the route of applying for a bailiff afterwards, then we charge a fixed fee of £250 plus VAT, and there's an additional court fee of £130. In terms of recovering those costs, the landlord is able to ask that the tenant is ordered to repay the court fee, the £355. But apart from that, you're limited to fixed costs, which tend to be not too much more than that. So there will be costs involved for the landlord to consider as well.
Are there situations where the landlord just settles with the tenant out of court just to go?
Yeah, that's always possible. And often we do encourage, particularly if you've got a landlord who isn't able, for example, to issue a Section 21 notice because they haven't carried out the gas safety inspections. And if they can't satisfy one of the reasons under the Section 8 notice to evict a tenant, then really their only option is to try and negotiate with the tenant. Or sometimes a landlord may prefer simply just to negotiate with the tenant in order to avoid the need of actually going to court in the first place. And if some kind of amicable agreement can be reached, then that's always an option, and indeed is often preferable.
Is that happening more and more, Simeon? I mean, I get the impression that, you know, there are landlords looking to turn the property into some residential development or something, you know.
Yes,
and so it's
yeah.
of great benefit to them to have vacant possession.
Yeah, it often does happen, particularly if speed is something that's a particular factor for the landlord, then coming to some kind of agreement can often be quicker than the whole rigmarole of going to court and the costs involved with that. It definitely does happen. Whether it's increasing, I'm not 100% sure. We still seem to be getting just as many inquiries in terms of going to court, but it definitely does happen. It's always something for a landlord to consider.
And there's been discussion about changing the law around no-fault evictions, I think. And just update us briefly on what the current situation is.
That's right. It has been in the news a lot recently. And in May of last year, the Renters Reform Bill was introduced to Parliament. That had the aim of abolishing no-fault evictions under the Section 21 and accelerated possession procedure. The reasoning behind that was that it will make tenants more secure in their position, and they won't be reluctant to ask their landlords, for example, to carry out repairs for fear of the landlord deciding to increase their rent or evict them. And so under that piece of legislation, Section 21 notices would be abolished and only the Section 8 procedure would be available, although it would be amended to give the landlord some additional protection. But essentially, if that was to become law, then landlords would need to always provide a reason for an eviction. However, that piece of legislation does seem to have been delayed a few times, and its future is somewhat in doubt at the moment. Obviously, there's been backlash from landlords and also some pushback from Conservative backbenchers. So for now, no-fault evictions continue as before. But landlords and indeed anybody looking to enter the rental market should be aware that the bill is still on the table and the law may well change soon.
So what advice would you give to a tenant whose landlord's trying to get them out? Listen out,
right.
Tenants.
Well, for a tenant who's been served a Section 21 notice, firstly, I would say check that notice very carefully to ensure that the details are all correct. You should also ask yourself whether you've received copies of the documents I mentioned, so the energy performance certificate, the how to rent guide, any gas safety certificates. Because if you haven't received those, then you can essentially argue that the Section 21 notice was invalid and therefore the judge should refuse to grant a possession order. if you've been issued a Section 8 notice for rent arrears, then, as I mentioned, it's only obligatory for a judge to grant an order if there are at least 2 months' rent arrears outstanding. So it's possible for a tenant to either pay that off or just to reduce it below the two-month threshold. And then there's more likelihood that an order would be refused. Not impossible, but of course it puts the tenant in a better position than they otherwise would be. And then, as I mentioned earlier, of course, you know, if you're in any particularly difficult circumstances, then you can always put that to the court and try and appeal for an extension of time to remain in the property.
Well, Simeon, you've been incredibly detailed in your responses to these questions. There's a lot of very useful information here for tenants and landlords alike. Is there anything else that you want to add as a kind of final thought?
What I'll probably mention is, because it can be quite a complicated area of law, and particularly there's a lot of strict timelines and procedures that are involved, I think basically my main piece of advice would be to any landlords or tenants that if you find yourself in a situation where you are facing either eviction or needing to evict a tenant, then number one, I would recommend you take legal advice. Yeah, that's probably the golden rule, I would say.
Sure. This is something not to attempt as a DIY project.
Yeah, you can end up with more costs and time and so on. So always take legal advice.
Simeon, thank you very much for your time today. If someone wants to make direct contact with you for more information on this, please give some information about how they can do that.
Of course. So they can call our Tunbridge Wells office on 01892 526 344. That's 01892 526 344. Or alternatively, feel free to drop me a line. My email address is sblewett@berryandlamberts.co.uk. And of course, you can also find us online at www.berryandlamberts.co.uk, which contains as well all our contact details and office locations. So feel free to get in touch with any queries.
Thank you very much for your time today, Simeon. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you very much, Paul.
I've been talking to Simeon Blewett, who is a solicitor at Berry & Lambert Solicitors today, and we've been covering dispute resolution and specifically focusing on possession proceedings as part of the commercial and dispute resolution that Simeon specialises in with Berry & Lambert Solicitors. And please don't forget to listen out to more podcasts in this series of discussions with the solicitors at Berry & Lambert's with this new series of podcasts. I'm Paul Harvey. Look forward to your company next time.
Thank you for listening to the Berry & Lambert Solicitors podcast series. To find out more about us, our services, and what our clients say, visit our website at berryandlamberts.co.uk. Berry & Lambert Solicitors is regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority and is a proud member of LawNet, the leading network of independent law firms promoting excellence and best practice. Please note that information provided in this podcast series does not constitute legal advice and serves as a general guide only. The law may have changed since this podcast was recorded. Listeners should seek legal advice from a solicitor who will take their individual and personal circumstances into consideration.